I am Plata on the Line in Vancouver, British Columbia at thecommentary.ca. Whisper Darkly is a new concept album out now. It's an immersive electro swing musical with music and lyrics by Andrew Gerla and a book by DJ Salzberg. Mr. Gerla joins me now to talk about this piece that's set during Prohibition and which combines 1920s and 1930s jazz and vaudeville with infectious 21st century EDM beats. The piece is set in the 1920s, but like a 2020s show with a fresh sound. This album features Kayla Davion, Clayborne Elder, Carrie Renee Fuller, Ali Mousy, Elena Waters, Brad Oscar, and Howard McGillen, among others. The album is from TBIC Music Group and available now. Andrew Gerla is a multifaceted theater creator, musician, author, and educator. He has served as a conductor, accompanist, and musical director for some of Broadway's biggest names. He was a member of the faculty at Yale University for 10 years, teaching songwriting and musical theater performance. He became a founding faculty member of the musical department at the Manhattan School of Music, where he currently teaches. Visit andrewgerla.com for more. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Andrew Gerla. Mr. Gerla, good morning.
Hi.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
This album is just it's just a terrific listen because it feels familiar. There's songs in here that sound like standards, and at the same time, it's fresh because it's obviously new and the sound is new. But it does take place in 1928. What drew you to that time and place?
Well, my collaborator, DJ Salisbury, who wrote the book, he actually came up with the idea for the show. He wanted to do an immersive musical. We were both really interested and excited about the new immersive theater that's being developed both here and abroad. And we wanted to try our hand at it. One thing that we really wanted to concentrate on, though, is to maintain the traditional storytelling of a good old-fashioned musical, because we really love story, we really love characters that we can get to know and root for and care about over the course of an evening. And some of the immersive theater that we had seen was sort of more about the experience and more about sort of wandering around a space, and we wanted to find a way that we could combine both so that the audience feels like they're part of the story, and yet also they can sit there and really get to know these characters and over the course of the evening. To them. And so DJ had this idea to set it in a speakeasy. So we get sort of the best of both worlds. We get an environment that's really exciting, but the audience is mostly seated in one place for the whole show. They do eventually, at the end, get up and do stuff. But it gave us the opportunity to tell a great story, but also have the audience feel like they've really time-traveled, like they're back in 1928 in an actual club. The action happens all around them. They can eavesdrop on scenes that happen by the bar or in the dressing rooms. So it's sort of best of the both worlds. And so DJ came to me with this speakeasy idea.
Yeah.
And I've always been a huge fan of jazz and vaudeville. And so I said, absolutely, that sounds really fun.
Yeah. So the music does feel like it's from the 1920s. But I guess that's the challenge for you as the writer. Of the music and lyrics is that they have to sound of the era, but they also include this modern sensibility, if you will.
Well, that's why we were really excited. I had, right when he came to me, I had just started listening to electro swing, which is a genre in and of itself. It's really, really big in Europe, but also here. Sorry?
No, I was nodding.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and it's exactly what it sounds like.
Yeah.
It's a combination of jazz and vaudeville musical vocabulary with 21st century EDM electro dance beats. So club beats plus 1928 sounds, and it's absolutely perfect because, like you said, we wanted to have music that sounds like the period, that gives a nod at least to jazz, to vaudeville, but we didn't want it to sound antique. Right, we didn't want it to sound like literally like your great grandmother's music.
Yeah.
We wanted it to also sound like today, and also to give our audiences the same feeling that audiences of 1928 would have had listening to jazz for the first time. Right, because jazz was still fairly new and exciting and a little risque, and we wanted to give that feeling to contemporary audiences. So we wanted to use this contemporary EDM flavor behind the more traditional musical vocabulary.
There's some marvelous themes that that Whisper Darkly touches on, you know, or that it's set amongst, like Prohibition, booze, obviously,
right.
Jazz, vaudeville, vice. The New York of 100 years ago does resonate with today, doesn't it?
I think it does. I mean, so the proprietress, the woman who runs this club, her name is Topeka McShane.
Mm-hmm.
And throughout the evening, she's really dedicated to encouraging the audience and also to the girls who are in her company to live life to the fullest, live life on your own terms, to turn away anyone who's telling you no, or people that are trying to make you feel ashamed for being who you are. And I think that's a story that always resonates.
Yeah, the agency of these women, I mean, I hear that in the lyrics that you've written.
Because
obviously this is just an album that I've heard. I haven't seen anything.
Right.
It does come through, and to write for those characters at that time, it must be fun, isn't it, to sort of look back and look behind, if you will.
Absolutely. It really was. And so it centers on these three women. There's Topeka, who runs the club. There's her niece, Evie, who just arrived in New York. And is trying to sort of figure out who she is in this new crazy big town. And then there's Wysandria Cole Davis, who is sort of like a Josephine Baker character. She left New York because she couldn't get ahead because of racist club owners. She went to Europe, became a star, and now she's back visiting her old friend Topeka. And each of these characters gave me such a great, just a wealth of character points, character details to dig into and to think about, yeah, what would their life have been like? What obstacles would they have faced, be it from their race or from being just women, and how would they have overcome that?
And it's also a marvelous tribute, a loving look at New York City, nightlife especially. I mean, the 1920s seems like a dark, foreboding place, but it's fun and exciting at the same time, isn't it?
It really was, and living here in New York, it makes it a little easier to sort of get the flavor of it. But yes, it was. I'm not sure it was a dark time. It was a dark time for some.
Yeah.
But it was also a time of great freedom. It was, you know, the war had ended, you know, almost 10 years before, but. You know, the role of women was really being challenged, and they were making great strides in terms of their personal freedoms, their social freedoms, what they were allowed to do to come out of the house more, dress how they want to dress, and I think it was a time of real excitement.
So I was curious about the lyrics. I mentioned that a moment ago, because you do say a lot as we listen to the album, and we get a great sense of the place and the characters. Listening to Whisper Darkly, the concept album, in terms of lyric writing, by the way, what comes first for you? Is it the music or the lyrics?
It's generally the hook, I would say, so the title of the song.
Yeah.
That's, if I don't have that, I probably am not going to start writing music yet. I'll generally start with sort of a stream of consciousness, so I'll know where this character is in their life, why they need to sing a song right now, so something important is happening. And I'll just sort of stream of consciousness them for a little bit, just sort of write a few paragraphs, and somewhere along the way it may start to rhyme, and then some interesting phrases might sort of stick out to me that feel like, oh, that could be a song title. And then it may start to fall into a rhythm. I'll generally have a rhythm, if not the exact melody.
Yeah, a lot of the lyrics, you know, they read like poetry, because it does take a lot of discipline. You can't waste words, and you have to tell so much in few words. And that's what I got out of listening to the album and enjoying a great deal is turns of phrases. And the lyrics themselves are just, they stick with you. They're catchy, and they make you want to see the show, if you will.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. Well, it's a lot of fun for me to get inside characters' heads. So I trained as an actor a bit. I did a little bit of acting. But I realized pretty quickly that if I'm a writer, that I could play all the roles, not just the one that I got in the show. So that's just a great exercise for me. And yes, it is a bit like a crossword puzzle, especially if you're trying to do more period structures that are more tightly rhymed. Uh-huh. I can't do lyric writing really after lunch. I have to be fresh. So I start the day working on the crossword puzzle of lyric writing, and then in the afternoon I'll work on music usually.
Do you, as you're writing music and or lyrics, do you consider the voices you'll need? I mean, do you think about the size of the cast? I mean, you probably aren't writing for a cast size of for Aida, for example.
Right. Yes, well, definitely. I mean, that's sort of two questions. So, yes, I do try to think about, I think of an actor I know, generally, either one that I've worked with or someone famous, who I think would be really great for this role. And then I have a specific voice that I can have in my mind that I write for. So I can think about, okay, well, what are their money notes, for example? Where do they really like to live? So I can write characters that have different vocal types. I don't end up writing for just the same kind of high-belting woman, for example. But then, yes, I mean, certainly you have to, when you're writing a show, you can't write for, you know, an unlimited size of cast, not if you wanted to get it produced. So, yes, you do have to sort of think about, okay, how many people do I have, especially in production numbers, right, in the big numbers which have lots of people singing at the same time. Wait, how many people do I actually have? Hmm. Who's going to be singing what note exactly? I do like to map that out in advance.
And were you involved in, say, the casting of this album and what voices or what performers sang which songs?
Absolutely, absolutely. We had great good fortune to have our Topeka McShane, Elena Waters. She had done a workshop with us in Orlando, so she knew the role and she knew the songs, and she's absolutely fantastic. She's a wonderful, wonderful Broadway veteran of The Cher Show and West Side Story and Mrs. Doubtfire and a bunch of others. We had a couple other people who had done a workshop with us, and then others were either friends or we were recommended. They were recommended to us. We did a lot of listening on YouTube to find singers that we didn't know. For example, Kayla Davion, who plays Wysandria Cole Davis, she was not someone that we had known. She was recommended to us, and she was one of the Tinas on Broadway in Tina the Musical, and she's absolutely phenomenal. The same with Carrie Renee Fuller, who was in the cast of Six, the musical, who we hadn't known, but she had exactly what we were looking for, which is this combination of modern and historical. Yeah. Combination of someone who feels like they're from the contemporary musical theater world, but also would not be out of place singing a jazz song in a club. And that's rare. That's rare. And Carrie Renee Fuller, we really got someone who could do both sides, who feels absolutely natural in a belt your face off contemporary song, but also has a real period sensibility.
The song Love in the Shadows, I like that song because it's one of those songs, as I alluded to a moment ago, where it sounds like it's a song that's been around forever. It's like a standard, if you will. And when you marry that with Howard McGillan's voice, who for a lot of us who recognize his voice, I guess it does lend itself to that idea that it's been around for a long time.
Well, that song, that's interesting you single that one out. That is our most traditional song. That has very little of the electro in it.
Yeah.
That is, because that character, again, we want to try to find ways to differentiate between our characters. That character is the older maitre d', and he has a very continental sensibility, which we learn later is kind of put on. But he does like to pretend to be very, very sophisticated and world-wise. And that was actually the last song that I wrote.
Really?
for the show. Yeah, and I we wanted to give that character a song. He didn't have a song. And I thought, well, what period colors have I not explored? What composers have I not sort of brought homage to? And I thought, well, it's a queer love story, the song, and it's I wanted to honor a couple of the queer composers of the day. So it's a Noel Coward, Billy Strayhorn homage. And I thought, well, what song would they have written if they could have written a more straightforward gay love song in the day?
Jazz Age Johnny is such an enjoyable song. I mean, I can't see how that doesn't stop the show.
That's a lot of fun. That's written for the comedian Mortimer Woodcock, and he's a grouchy asshole, pardon my French,
yeah.
Like a lot of comedians are, but when he gets on stage, he's hilarious. That was a lot of fun to write, and that's just a straight vaudeville, ridiculous number.
Yeah, it is fun to listen to. I guess he's called...
And of course, we got Brad Oscar for that. I mean, the two-time Tony nominee Brad Oscar from the producers and Stan-a-lot, and he's absolutely... He's just about to go on now as the wizard in Wicked.
Ah,
so we're all very excited to see that.
Yeah. You mentioned as you were writing Love in the Shadows, thinking about Coward and Strayhorn. What influences you during the writing process? You know, since this is set during the Prohibition era, are there? I mean, you do look at whoever was contemporary at the time, right?
Absolutely, and when I write shows that are set in a period, I try to stay away from just straight pastiche, meaning writing songs that literally sound like they could have been written in 1928, because it's a little bit limiting. And I, as an artist, I want to bring my own, you know, voice to whatever music I write. I definitely look at what was being written then. I didn't limit myself just to the 1920s musical vocabulary, which is a little bit conservative. I like to go a little further afield, so I'm bringing in some chords from the later big band, that style. But it's the rhythms and the structures, I think, that really give you a sense of period, not just the harmonies.
Yeah, you mentioned that writing lyrics was best in the morning. Is the morning the best time for you to write music as well?
No, I can write music anytime. Music is easier for me. I grew up as a pianist, and so I'm comfortable just sitting at the piano and noodling at any time. But yeah, the hard brain work is the lyrics, so that has to come when I'm fresh.
And you teach at the Manhattan School of Music, I understand. Is that correct?
Yes.
You taught at Yale for a number of years as well.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. Did you find teaching rewarding and complementary to the craft and art that you do in terms of creating?
Absolutely, absolutely. I find, I've taught songwriting and I've taught acting, and being able to articulate what is good writing or good acting is absolutely invaluable, because when I go to, for example, if I go to write a song, having just worked with an actor and trying to help them make a song active, for example, having them imagine the world of their character, it allows me to think, okay, well, now what kind of song should I write so that an actor will be able to access it, will give them a lot of juice to play with, a lot of active beats to play. It does help me to stay away from more sort of passive or mood songs, which can be nice, but better to give your actor something to play.
Yeah, I guess that line from your pupils you were taught, I mean, do you find that familiar to the way you look at, say, working?
Absolutely, absolutely. I think they often come up with things I would never have thought of, and they're also keyed into the popular culture in a way that I'm not. And I think, especially when you're trying to write a show that is at least part contemporary, that's really important.
So for people listening to this who aren't familiar, the idea of the concept album is to put together the songs written for a particular piece, but it's also used, I guess, to generate interest in developing the work itself into a full production. Is that right?
Exactly, exactly. So we have not had a full production yet. We put on this workshop ourselves in Orlando at the height of the pandemic, which is a crazy thing to do, but we needed to see it on its feet to see how it worked. But we had, you know, we made all of these tracks that will be used for the live production, because this is electro swing. It's going to be partly electronic tracks and partly live musicians. So we had all these tracks, and we thought, well, that's kind of a no-brainer. Why don't we make the album first, since we already have all these assets, we have these fantastic actors, and let's get the score out into the world, and let's get some fans. We knew that it would make a great album. It's a bit of an interesting show because, with the exception of one or maybe like two songs, each one of the songs in the show is performed as part of the floor show in the club.
Right.
So they're standalone numbers that work just as, you know, great show pieces, and you don't have to know a lot of the story. It's unlike a lot of shows where usually a lot or all of the songs are sung by characters who don't know they're singing, right? They're just sort of expressing themselves, and they happen to be singing. But we thought, well, this as an album, and let's put it out there and share it with people and hopefully get some fans. And yes, and use it as a calling card and try to get a producer or investors who can take it.
Yeah, so
across the finish line to a production.
Yeah, so when you saw it on its feet, if you will, in Florida, does that change the book, the music, the lyrics at all? I mean, when people other than you and DJ Salisbury, when you hear other people do it other than the two of you, say, do you find that influences some change, say, in the work?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's why you put on readings and workshops, so that you can see what works, what doesn't work. You can't really tell just reading it in your apartment what's going to play and what doesn't. For example, we had a song, so the first song for Carrie Renee Fuller's character, Evie, this was the third song we wrote for that character. The one that we did in Orlando, actually, it was a great song. It didn't work. Didn't end up working for the moment, so we wrote a whole new one just for the album.
I see. Yeah.
You learn what the audience wants at any given time, and that's hard to know if they're not there. Are they interested in hearing this character sing a song? For example, sometimes you write a song, and the audience is sort of ahead of that, or they want to get back to the main story. Lots of things you learn from seeing in front of an audience.
I can't see how the album as we hear it now. I can't see where you'd change it. It's such a fully formed show,
nice.
You know. It's an enjoyable one at that.
Thank you so much.
I wish I could produce this today.
Hope.
You know.
Oh my goodness! Well, we'll talk.
Yeah. Andrew, it's been such a pleasure talking to you. Congratulations on this, and continued good luck with it. I guess I shouldn't say good luck. Break a leg, right?
Oh, either way, I think it's okay. Break a leg is more, I guess, if you're going on stage.
We're
not quite going on stage yet. Yeah.
Well, hopefully it's soon. Thanks for your time today.
Hopefully soon. Thank you so much.
The website for more is at andrewgerla.com. The album is called Whispered Darkly. It's available from TBIC Music Group. Andrew Gerla, who wrote its music and lyrics, joined me on the line from New York City. In Vancouver, I'm Joseph Planta.